Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we're discussing the basic principles of devotional service, verse-by-verse discussion from this Sanskrit translation of Bhanu Maharaj. And the 55th principle, which is the first division, second wave, verse 214, Vaishnavanam Sevanam. And this is, he quotes here from the Padma Puran. Araranam sarvesham Vishnur araranam param tasmat purataram devi tadinam samarchanam. A very famous verse. Tadinam tadinam samarchanam. Service to Vaishnavas. Of all types of worship, worship of Vishnu is supreme. O Devi, worship of Vishnu's devotees, however, is even superior to that. So these are limbs of devotion, and this service to Vaishnavas is listed as one of the 64 most important principles in Chaitanya Bhagavat. So in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur is mentioning this principle also. He mentions three important principles. And he says Jiva Doya, Vaishnav Seva Nam Ruchi. That these are very important, to show compassion and mercy to the living entities, and then serving the Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Seva, and Nam Ruchi. And there's a relationship of all three. That Nam Ruchi is most desirable thing to have, most desirable wealth, is to have taste for Krishna's holy name, the Nam, the Kata, Hari Kata, especially Krishna's holy name. This is our biggest problem. We, as Lord Chaitanya aptly said, I have no attraction, non-anurag. I have no attraction or taste for the holy name of Krishna. Of course, that was his humility in the Shikshastakam. But this is a point, by serving the Vaishnavas, one develops a soft heart, and one attracts the heart of the Vaishnavas also. Service is attractive, because service is an expression of love. So when one lovingly deals with the devotees, by serving them in a very genuine and sincere way, then the devotees bestow their good wishes on that servitor. And good wishes are powerful, very powerful. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is saying that lochan, sparsha kripa, lochan kripa, then harda, suharda kripa. That simply by blessings, heartfelt blessings from a very advanced devotee, one can even attain bhava bhakti. The heartfelt blessings. Excuse me. So that's why devotees are always asking for mercy. Kripakaro, please give mercy. We're always begging Vaishnavas to give mercy. But actually a better way to get mercy, we usually, oftentimes, especially in India, Indian devotees, they go to some sannyasi or some elevated devotee, oh, Maharaj, please give me mercy. But that's kind of like, that's really not the way to do it. It's kind of like saying, I want to see God. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he replied, don't try to see God. Don't try to see God yourself, but act in such a way that God will want to come see you. So it's the same thing with obtaining mercy from the Vaishnavas. We can go directly and say, listen, give me your mercy. Direct. Or better approach is to go to the Vaishnava and say, how can I serve you? Kim karomi. Come with folded hands. And this we see in the lives of the six Goswamis. They came with straw between their teeth, with a humble service heart. And they admitted that they didn't know who they were. Kayami, tapatrai. Who am I? Why am I suffering the threefold miseries? And please engage me in service. Use me as an instrument. Use me, Lord Chaitanya. I have come to you to serve you. So this is a better way. This is actually the sure way to get mercy of the Vaishnavas, by coming, giving first, and then having faith that you'll receive something later. And generally our Western outlook is that we immediately come for the take. We come for the take. We come to collect. Please give me mercy. Rather than offering ourselves to the Vaishnavas. So this is the Vaishnava Seva has a very special quality that, first of all, to serve Vaishnavas, we must subdue our false ego. And secondly, we must have a feeling of gratitude and appreciation for the Vaishnavas. And such feelings of gratitude and appreciation indicate a general softening of the heart to begin with. If we can approach someone and genuinely say, yes, I would like to serve you, or how can I serve you? Or what service, can I render some service? I'm coming to this ashram, can I do service? I want to do service. And when one serves Vaishnavas, as is told in numerous places, Mahatsevam Dwaram Ahorami Muktes, so many places it's told that the door to liberation is opened by Mahatsevam, by serving great devotees, and Katha Ruchi, one gets a taste for hearing Hari Katha by serving great devotees. So this service principle, Vaishnav Seva, is very important. It is practically one of the main pillars of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, especially. This principle, it goes hand in hand with the concept of humility. You would look at these three principles, humility, prema, and service, and how much they're interrelated and how much they're connected. It explains as one actually moves further and further on the devotional scale towards Krishna, towards full surrender and loving Krishna, then he becomes more and more humble. Humility is the shadow of prema. They go together like heat and light. If you have fire, then you have some heat. So if you have prema, if someone has Krishna prema, they're so humble, they have so much humility. It's not just simply by becoming a materially humble person or an externally showing very humble and servile behavior that means you have Krishna prema. It just means that's your prarabdha, or that's your demeanor, because of your lack of self-confidence, or you may have some knowledge, and you feel some humility. But the humility of prema is something different. So service, humility, and prema, they're very related. So when we serve the Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Seva, and they become pleased, as Vaishnavas are soft-hearted. And service is only can be done if there's some spark or some touch of love in the heart. Service, voluntary service, not conscripted service or forced service or paid service, but voluntary service actually springs from a drop of love, that this person is worthy to serve. This person is attracting my heart to serve. And so that expression of service to the Vaishnava, Vaishnava Seva, indicates you're directing some affection towards that Vaishnava in a small way. And then the Vaishnava reciprocates by blessing us. So Jiva Doya, Vaishnava Seva, Nam Ruchi. This is the result, Ruchi, Katha Ruchi. There's a verse also in Bhagavatam. By service of the Vaishnavas, one gets taste for Hari Katha. And similarly, Jiva Doya, by showing compassion. Jiva Doya means showing compassion for ourselves to begin with. There's a verse in the Vritta Tarashiro Pagiyamana that people are killing Atmahan, people are killing themselves. People aren't even showing compassion to themselves. They have an expression in America, charity begins at home. Charity, giving donations or helping others. Well, we should also help ourselves in the true meaning of the self. Helping the Atma, discovering the Atma, the quest for the Atma. So Jiva Doya means begin with our own Jiva, our own Atma. Be compassionate to our own Atma by sending our Atma in the right direction. And Jiva Doya, Vaishnav Seva Nam Ruchi. Srupa Goswami here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's explaining that this Vaishnav Sevanam, as he says, is a 55th of the 64 principles, and it's a real pillar of bhakti, and it's something we tend to be a little bit slow on, especially in this age of individualism and isolationism. People aren't so much interactive besides computers, but I mean personally interactive and or proactive or whatever it is, I can't keep track. But people aren't too personal in general. And the idea of serving someone, it's so difficult to actually serve someone, to actually break down and humbly serve someone. So this is it. I mean, it's of all types of worship, it's so much emphasized. Araranam sarvesham Vishnur araranam param. So firstly, there is a gradual elimination and an establishment of a higher principle here. Mripa Goswami, citing this from Padma Purana, araranam, radha, worship, sarva, all, of all types of worship, what's the best? Because people worship demigods and spirits and beings and all kinds of personalities. He says, of all kinds of worship, worship of Vishnu, that is supreme, that is param, that is the topmost form, param araranam, araranam param. All right, so that's very good. We've eliminated all other competitors. No one, all Shiva worship, Brahma worship, Indra, Surya, all the 33 million demigods, Varuna, Kuvera, Ganesh, Durga, that we may worship, they are all eliminated with this phrase, Araranam Sarvesham Vishnu. Vishnu. Okay, only worship Vishnu. This is Param Araranam, the topmost form of worship. So that's a good start. And then it goes on, then the verse says, but Param, and then there's Parataram. And we say Purna, Purnatara, Purnatam. So this is Parataram. Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. But even higher than worship of Vishnu is worship of Vishnu's devotees. So this shows the exclusivity of the Vishnu Bhakta, of the Krishna Bhakta, how exalted they are, how special they are, how unique they are, and how much fortune we will gain by worshiping them. And certainly the Vishnu Bhaktas or Krishna Bhaktas are much more accessible and, let's say, user-friendly than Vishnu. Vishnu is a little hard to see, to touch, to feel, to perceive, to relate to. He doesn't speak so much to the ordinary man. And it's not clear whether you're pleasing him or not. That's always a big question among devotees. Well, how do I know if I'm pleasing Krishna or not? And various answers are given according to the understanding. But it's very clear to understand whether you pleased a Vaishnava or displeased him. Because they can speak and react and respond. And anyone who's ever served an exalted devotee, intimately, personally serving them, then you'll know. We hear so much about Srila Prabhupada, his servants, the experiences they would have when Prabhupada would chop them up or they did something wrong and they were didn't do their service correctly, then Prabhupada would let them understand very clearly that they displeased him. At the same time, they would understand when they please Prabhupada. So this is another special quality that Vaishnavas are tangible and very much at hand sources of mercy. We can easily derive mercy from Vaishnavas because they're all around us. We're surrounded. We're in our Vaishnava Raja Sabha. We're surrounded by Vaishnavas wherever we go. We can go in a Vaishnava circle. And we have so many unlimited opportunities to serve Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. But if it's only Vishnu and we're neophytes or Kanishthas, then our service to the Murti or Vishnu becomes somewhat circumscribed or limited because the Lord stays in the temple. He's not everywhere. But Vaishnavas are everywhere, moving everywhere, and they're in their homes, they're on the street, they're in the fest, they're everywhere. So they're easily accessible. You can easily find a Vaishnava to render service to. But temples are few and far between. And so this, and then getting response, getting reciprocation from the deity is also a little bit difficult to perceive for most. So therefore, the Padma Purana is saying that this is a supreme form of worship, the worship of Vaishnavas, because they immediately respond and reciprocate. And their blessings, when a Vaishnava blesses us, it's the Vaishnava's blessing us, but his blessings are backed. They're backed by the Supreme Lord. His will is, he's the Lord is the guarantor, the backer of the check. Like you write a check and then the bank is behind your check and they distribute the money that the check is made out for. So when the Vaishnava dispenses mercy to a devotee, then Krishna, he distributes. It comes from Krishna. The agent of mercy is the Vaishnava. But the reservoir of mercy is Krishna, especially his energetic expansion. Srimati Radharani, she's the Karuna Shakti. Karunamayi Radha. Radharani is Karunamayi. She's an ocean, Karuna Sagar. She's an ocean of compassion and mercy, Kripa. Kripa is a Shakti. So she is a reservoir of all Shakti. She is the repository of all energies and potencies. So Kripa Shakti, Vidya Shakti, Karuna Shakti, these are different energies of Krishna which are under the control of Srimati Radharani. So the Vaishnava, he's representing Radharani, Radharani's interest. So we say Vaishnava Parad. When we make a Vaishnava Parad, this word aparad means to dissatisfy the Vaishnava. So the Vaishnava is dissatisfied with us, then Radharani is dissatisfied. And that means the flow of mercy may be restricted. But if the Vaishnava is pleased by Aradhanam, Vishnu or Vaishnava Aradhanam, if the Vaishnava is pleased, then Radharani is pleased. And she instills mercy in the Kripa Shakti Murti, which is the Vaishnava, devotee, guru, whatever, whomever. And then they drawing from that ocean of mercy, they bestow their mercy on us, their good wishes, their ashirvad, their blessings. So that's the power. The power comes from the powerhouse. In Vrindavan, they have a phrase, the pandas, when they're talking, they say, Krishna is Bhagavan, but Radharani is the supreme power. Sometimes they speak in English. They say, okay, here in Vrindavan, in Braj Mandal, Radharani is the supreme powerhouse. She's the supreme powerhouse, the source of all the electric energy, the Niagara Falls or whatever. Niagara Falls of mercy. So everything comes from Radharani. So this is an important devotional principle. And it goes all the way across the board. This is, of course, sadhana bhakti. In Vaidhi sadhana, and Raganuga sadhana, and Bhava bhakti, and Prema bhakti, everywhere the principle of seva is there. Serving someone we recognize as equal or superior, or just serving the Vaishnavas. It's not a principle that we ever transcend. Oh, now I'm practicing Raganuga sadhana. I need not serve the Vaishnavas anymore. Now I'm a Bhava bhakta. Now I'm a Prema bhakta. I don't need to serve Vaishnavas anymore. It's not one of these type of principles. It's actually an eternal principle. Bhakti is eternal. And all these principles have their eternal aspect. And they're expressed in particular ways at particular levels of consciousness and advancement. So Vaishnava Seva, you think that in the spiritual world, the mandris aren't serving each other? They're also serving. Rati Mandri, Raghunath Das, he's carrying out orders, and Agya and orders of Rupa Goswami. So the service is going on there also, serving devotees. Rupa Mandri is also a devotee, and so is Rati Mandri. But the service is going on. This is the whole spiritual world. So it's something a lot of us, I think, we can consider the principle of service. And it's so important that this is the principle here, the 55th principle. Vaishnav Sevanam. And then he quotes 4 or 5 verses to support this. So this, of all the different principles of devotion, and now we're at 55, this one has probably the most supporting verses, or praman, of all the principles that we've discussed so far. So let's hear some of those supporting principles that will further drive the point home. This is from 3rd Canto, Chapter 7, Verse 19, which is verse 215 in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yat sevaya bhagavata kutashtasya madhu jvishaha rati raso bhavetivra padayora vyasanardana. By serving the devotee, one will be developed a fixed manifestation of bhav for the feet of the personality of Godhead. Possessed of an eternal form, the enemy of the Madhu demon, that bhav vanquishes one's material distress. So this is, as I was mentioning, 3.7.19 is telling that it's by serving the devotee, one will actually manifest, one will attain bhava bhakti. And this is from Skanda Puran. Shankar Chakran Krankita Tanu Shirasa Manjari Dara Gopi Chandana Liptango Drishtas Chittaragam Kuta. Where sin is, or where is sin for that person who has seen a Vaishnava, whose body is marked with the signs of a conch and disc, and who has Tulsi Manjaris on his head, and whose limbs are smeared with Gopi Chandan? So apparently, sometimes the devotees, when they receive the Nirmalya of the Mahaprasad from Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu, they put the Manjaris offered to the Lord on their head. So they put it on their head. Maybe it's a garland, or maybe it's a whole garland. They wrap their garland on their head. We haven't seen so much of this in ISKCON, but I am reminded of one Bengali devotee in ISKCON temple. His name is, they call him Dadu. I think Dadu means grandfather or something. He's a very nice devotee, elderly Bengali gentleman who's actually he's initiated here. His guru is from Radhakun, but he's been serving in ISKCON Vrindavan for about 20 years. Maybe you've seen Dadu. Very, very interesting chap, and lots of funny stories he tells. Bengali stories with a moral. But he always wears, takes the Didi garlands and wraps them around his head like Nehru. Nehru is some guy from Italy or something like that. Emperor of Italy, Nehru or something. He wraps the garlands around like this. Looks rather a little funny. But he's honoring in that way. This is the point. There's one commentary on this verse that's not here, but it's another book that explains that the Vaishnava, sometimes a Vaishnava, you may see a Vaishnava with Gopi Chan on his limbs, and Tilak, Gopi Chan means Tilak, and having a Maha Garland, the Lord's Maha Garland, Tulsi Garland on his head. Or if he's from South, he's a South Indian Vaishnava, he may have a Shankh and Chakra stamped like a tattoo on his arms. That's the symbol. So the commentary is that Vaishnava is so powerful. If a person is actually Saralata, which means simple and pure-hearted, if such a pure-hearted and simple person only sees, just by seeing a Vaishnava, he may think, oh, what an interesting, attractive person. I think I should become a Vaishnava and stop my sinful activities. So maybe these kind of people are in India, but at least in America, if someone sees you wearing a Tulsi garland on your head and Gopi Chandan all over your body, they'll probably only laugh at you or throw a beer can at you or something. There's not too many Saralatas, soft-hearted people. But Jiva Goswami's commentary here is saying that the impression, the visual impression of simply seeing a Vaishnava, because this is all about Vaishnava Sevanam, the 55th principle of bhakti, to serve the Vaishnavas, and how Vaishnavas are so auspicious and so powerful and influential that simply by displaying the marks of a Vaishnava for the Sri Vaishnavas in South India, they wear these marks on their upper arms, the men that is, conch shell and chakra. And all Vaishnavas wear the signs of the tilak, urdhva pundra. They all wear tilak, gopichan. And occasionally you see them sporting flower garlands or tulsi manjaris. So this image, this visual image, this sight of seeing a Vaishnava displaying these Vaishnav chinna, signs of Vaishnava, is so purifying and powerful that in a soft-hearted person, it may create a thought in their mind. This person looks like something special. And I think I'd like to be like him. He seems to be something special. And Jiva Goswami is saying that this can also happen. Of course, it must be rare that such a thing happens, but it does happen. Therefore, that's why generally, at least Srila Prabhupada used to encourage us to wear the signs of Vaishnava, although it's not necessary. Even Tulsi beads are not necessary If one is surrendered in the heart to the Lord and serving the Lord, these are only externals, neck beads and all these things, tilak. If you go to Vrindavan and you meet the Braja Gopis, they're not wearing tulsi neck beads, and they don't have any Java bags, and they don't have tilak on their forehead, 12 marks of tilak on their bodies. But the Gopis of Vrindavan are certainly the most Krishna conscious personalities in the universe, isn't it? So it's explained in Raghavartman Chandrika that these are Subhishta Bhavit Anukul. They're not Subhishta Bhavamayi. They're not necessary to develop our Bhava, but they're favorable. They're okay. They're helpful. But nevertheless, Prabhupada encouraged us to wear all these things. So when we go out in public, people say, oh, what is that on your face? Or what is that? What is that mark on your face? Oh, this is a mark of, this is Krishna's footprint, or this is tulsi leaf, or this is a symbol of someone who's, let's say, trying to dedicate his life to God, or this indicates that our body is a temple of the Lord, and so many things we say. And whatever we say, it's going to direct people towards spiritual thoughts. It's going to turn people's minds towards God, because that's what it's all about. It's a spiritual symbol. So in this way, the Vaishnava also renders some useful contribution to society. Another verse he's telling in first canto, Rupa Goswami, chapter 19, verse 33, Yesham samsmaranat pumsam sadyo shudyanti vaigriha kim punar darshana sparsha parashochashanadivi. Simply by remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet and offering you a seat in our home. This is a verse, I think it's about Narada Muni being greeted by King Yudhisthira. I can't remember. But it's about the devotee. How, again, the effect of the devotee. If one speaks about a devotee, in fact, in Padma Puran, it explains that if someone speaks about an exalted devotee favorably, then 1/6, I don't know how they arrive at this mathematical computation, but in Padma Purana it says, if one speaks nicely about a very exalted devotee, then 1/6 of that devotee's sukriti and spiritual credits, let's say, they come into the heart of the person who's speaking. So that's the whole idea of Vaishnava biographies and Tirobhavas and Anubhavas. We honor the disappearance days, especially the Tirobhava, the disappearance days of the great Vaishnavas, and we hear talk about them, Harikatha, and about their charitra, their life and teachings. And we remember them and we pray to them and we think of them, Srup Damodar Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti. And by that thought and by that remembrance, then the goodness of their heart and their spiritual qualities, they become sprinkled in our hearts. So that's why it's a very much integral part of devotional practices to invoke the memory of the previous acharyas and to glorify the existing acharyas. It's a very good practice. So this is, generally our minds in Kali Yuga are so negative, they're always dwelling on the negative aspects and bad qualities of others. And that also comes to us. When we discuss the bad qualities of others, then the bad qualities of others come to us. So it's a little dangerous. It's kind of like gambling. If you discuss the right thing, you can win a lot. If you discuss the wrong thing, you can lose a lot. So there's three choices. You can discuss the right thing and win a lot, discuss the wrong thing and lose a lot, or keep quiet. Don't say anything. Just bemoan and remember Krishna. Then you also make advancement. Silence is also golden. Moan Vrata is also one principle in spiritual life. It's also a very nice practice. Many people have done it. We've also done it for periods of time. It's actually a very good thing to do. Especially if we have the tendency to speak wrongly, our tongue seems to want to go in the wrong direction often and speak wrong things. Irrepressible pushing of the tongue, vachavegam, to discuss the wrong subjects or speak about the wrong qualities of the devotees, And the practice of Mon is very good at practice for taming the tongue. Tongue is like a wild tiger. Well, I'll say all tigers are pretty wild, but it's like a tiger. And if you don't feed the tiger for some weeks, then it becomes a little bit tame. And then even he can be trained. You can starve him, and then by gradually feeding him and whipping him, and you can train him, actually, to some extent. That's what they do in the circuses. So Mon actually tames the tiger of the tongue. Mon means a vow of silence. You say, okay, and that's nowadays people are so addicted to their cell phones. That's like a major revolution. Turn off your cell phone for 3 days. That's one thing. If you can do that, you're a Mahayogi. And the next thing, if you're like a Siddha yogi, you don't speak for 3 days. So I once did for 7 days. It was really wonderful, actually. It's kind of like the proof of the pudding is in the tasting type of thing. If you've never done it, you can't understand it. And if you've done it, then you can understand how nice it is. Anyway, try it. You'll see. It's very good. It's a very good thing. So the devotee, simply by remembering a devotee, and by remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. If by seeing you, we become purified. By touching you, by washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. This is Madi Puran. This is very famous. Everyone's heard so many times. Ye me bhakta jana partha na me bhaktas jate janaha. Mad bhaktanam cha ye bhaktas te me bhaktat bhaktatama mata. Lord Krishna is speaking to his devotee Arjun. Those who claim to be my devotees are not my devotees. However, those who are devotees of my devotees, I consider them to be the best of my devotees. So this is the viewpoint of Krishna. He personally is not so interested in people worshipping him. Krishna is not so interested in people worshipping him or serving him. He has plenty of servitors. Brahma certified that, right? Lakshmi sahasrasatasam brahma sevyamanam. Lakshmi sahasrasatasam. He's got crores and crores of Lakshmi serving him, his every wish and whim. So Vishnu is not short in servitors. Lakshmi sahasrasatasam brahma sevyamanam. Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. So on that level, on that plane in the spiritual world, there's no shortage of servitors. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, I'm not so much in need of servitors, and I'm not so much impressed or happy with someone who claims to be, oh, I am Krishna's devotee. I am worshipping Krishna. I am Vishnu Bhakt. I am worshipping Vishnu. But if someone says, oh, I'm Vishnu Das's Bhakta, or I'm Guru Das or Vaishnav Das, then Krishna is very interested and very attracted to that mentality and that attitude and that mode of action, where one is so much absorbed in serving the Vaishnavas. That's the quickest way to gain the favor of the Lord, is by serving the Vaishnavas. The Kanishta only sees the Lord as the object of his service, but the Madhyam, he sees the Lord and his devotees as the object of his service. He realizes the supreme position of the devotees, and he acts accordingly to please them. 2.2.19 Yavanti Bhagavad Bhaktir Angani Kati Aniha Prayas Tavanti Tad Bhakta Bhaktir Api Buddha Vidu. All the limbs of bhakti described in relation to the Lord are also angas in relation to the devotees of the Lord. This is the conclusion of the wise. So all of these, so far 56 limbs have been discussed, and this is a verse by Bhakti. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, verse 1.2.2.19, Rupa Goswami is interjecting here his viewpoint as the Rasacharya, the Acharya of Abhideya Tattva, or the practice of devotion. He's saying that I discussed so far 56 limbs of devotion: Atmanavedanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, observing festivals, and showing respect, offering prayers. So many limbs we've discussed in relation mostly to the deity or to Vishnu. Now he's stepping aside and saying, I've told you all these different limbs of devotion, And generally, we're thinking that the 64 limbs of devotion are meant, this is devotional service, this is Krishna bhakti, these are limbs of devotion, anga, bhakti anga. These are limbs and services and practices that we engage in to give pleasure and happiness to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And these are meant for his pleasure. But now he's saying all these limbs and all these practices can be directed to the devotee. We can offer prayers to devotees, and we have so many prayers to devotees. Jayanila, Prima, Dana, so many prayers. Sri Rupa Mandripada. So we can pray to the devotees, and we can make friendship with the devotees, and we can serve the devotees, and we can Atman Navedanam with the devotees. And so all these services, observe festivals with the devotees, that's Tirubhav, Avirbhav. So this is a very interesting point, that as they say in English, love me, love my dog. So we love Bhagavan, and these are, there are 64 ways to express our love for Bhagavan. And that comes narrowed down into Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So these nine limbs of devotion, which are nine of the 64, they can be expressed in relation to the Vaishnava. Hear about the Vaishnava, glorify the Vaishnava, do Vaishnava Kirtan, then remember the Vaishnavas, serve the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, worship the Vaishnavas, offer prayers to the Vaishnavas, serve the Vaishnavas, make friends with the Vaishnavas, and give everything and surrender everything to the Vaishnavas. Guru Parashraya. You see the point? Very interesting. Now tomorrow we'll discuss the 57th verse, 57th principle, which is observing festivals. So Rupa Goswami, with this verse, 1.2.2.19, it really broadens the whole viewpoint of devotional service, that Krishna Bhakti, Vaishnava Bhakti is one. Vaishnava Bhakti, Guru, we say, everyone's heard the term Guru Bhakti, and that's so much desirable and so much important. Guru Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti, Guru Bhakti, Vaishnava Bhakti. So what's the common denominator here? Bhakti. So the object of our bhakti is different, but ultimately it's one. They're all three are expressions of the one. The Vaishnava is an expression of Krishna, and the Guru is an expression of Krishna. It's serving Krishna in different forms, isn't it? The Vaishnava is a form of Krishna. Bhakti, the Guru is a form of Krishna. So Krishna Bhakti means, when we say Krishna Bhakti or I'm a Krishna Bhakta, if I say I'm a Krishna Bhakta, Rupa Goswami is telling us, that means you must, as much as you are a Krishna Bhakta, you must also be a Vaishnava Bhakta. And as much as you're a Krishna Bhakta, you must also be a Guru Bhakta, isn't it? This is the full holistic view or the whole circle view of bhakti, isn't it? It can't be just, oh, I'm only a Krishna Bhakta. Every Krishna Bhakta has to be Vaishnava Bhakta and Guru Bhakta. And we see that those that are totally absorbed and really, this was the quality that the Indians, when they first saw Prabhupada's disciples, when they came to India, they repeatedly remarked on this point that the followers of A.C. Bhaktivedanta, I see in them a lot of Guru Bhakti. They use this term, a lot of Guru Bhakti. They have a lot of devotion for their Guru, Srila Prabhupada. It's so much service, so much surrender, so much enthusiasm, so much toleration. They're tolerating so many difficulties, heat and cold and austere conditions, and going on relentlessly serving without stop. So this type of dedication and absorption and an affectionate expression of service can only be possible if one has bhakti, real devotion for the object of devotion. So this impressed the onlookers and the Indians that Srila Prabhupada's followers are full of Guru Bhakti. He brought that bhakti out of the heart. Of course, he placed it there and he made it manifest and returned it to him. So this is the perfection of life, to have as much Guru Bhakti and Vaishnava Bhakti. Krishna Bhakti, 100%. Vaishnava Bhakti, 100%. Guru Bhakti, 100%. This is the direction that Rupa Goswami is pointing us in. So we can each examine our treasure house of devotion. Maybe we have to increase in different areas.